Welcome to End of Life University Podcast, where we share real talk about life and death. I'm your host, Dr. Karen Wyatt, and thank you so much for joining me here today for episode number 318. Today, I'm talking all about stories, and I'm going to dive right into this topic. It's a solo episode, so I don't have an interview to introduce. It'll just be me sharing a little bit of the wisdom and information I've gleaned about storytelling over the years and why it's really important that we incorporate stories into the teaching that we're trying to do around end-of-life issues. So you yourself have encountered the value of stories. If you've ever been watching a movie where you've been totally swept away by the story happening and unfolding before your eyes, or if you've been caught up in reading a book that you can't put down and you turn page after page, in both of those situations, it's usually the story itself that is captivating you, not the cinematography or the skill of the director or the author who wrote the book. It's the story. Hearing about the characters and what they're experiencing and going through, and even identifying yourself as being similar to the characters, almost as if you are living the actual story that you're watching or reading about. It's a very powerful experience when it happens to you, but it's an experience that we can tap into ourselves in the process of teaching people. So I want to convince you of this, why you should be using stories when you teach, and then we'll talk a little bit about how stories work and what makes a good story for you to use. So there have been some great studies done recently on the neurobiology of storytelling, and it's really fascinating that we've been able to measure and come to some understanding about stories and how and why they make an impact on us. And so one thing that they've found, when a person is listening to a story, their brain waves actually begin to synchronize with the brain waves of the storyteller. Which is interesting. It's as if literally you're being drawn into the world of the story and your own brain begins to function similar to the brain of the storyteller. And so you can see during that process, the storyteller is communicating a lot of things about the story, but emotion, attitudes, wisdom, knowledge, positive energy, all of those things can come through. And the listener can actually experience them while the story is being told. That's why it can be so compelling and we get drawn into a story, why our heart might start racing in the middle of an action movie, or we might find our palms sweating or our hair standing on end if something frightening is happening. We relate in every way to the story that is being told to us. And this is partly due to the synchronization of brainwaves between the storyteller and the listener. But another thing they have discovered that happens when you're listening to a really compelling story is the release of oxytocin, which is the neurohormone some people call the love hormone. It's a hormone that's responsible for connectedness, for our feelings of connection with other people, and the experience of empathy. In fact, one writer calls stories empathy machines because stories can elicit these positive feelings of concern for other people, which no other form of teaching is able to create. Stories also engage multiple parts of the brain, and they've measured 5 times the usual brain activity when people are listening to a story. And so stories light up the left side of our brain because we're processing the language and the words that we're hearing, but also the right side of our brain as our imaginations get engaged. And oftentimes, particularly a really good story that doesn't tell us all the answers right up front. We may be using our imaginations to conjure up possible outcomes of what might happen next. And so when that's happening, we're really firing on all circuits. Our brain is completely focused and totally engaged on the story and how it's playing out. And so as a result of this increased brain activity, engaging imagination, increasing empathy, the synchronization of brain waves, one of the most important discoveries they've made is that when people have been engaged by a compelling story, they are more likely afterwards to take action and to change their attitudes. So when you learn this, you see how powerful stories can be for the act of teaching, and particularly around death and dying topics when we're trying to motivate someone to complete their advanced directives, for example. We can stand in front of them and show them PowerPoint slides of graphs and statistics that tell them how many people have not completed their advanced directives, how many people die in a hospital. But if we tell them a story, we're much more likely to engage them fully, but also to motivate them ultimately to make a change in their behavior. So they're more likely to contemplate completing their advanced directives and then even to take action and go out and take that step and complete an advanced directive if they've been touched by stories during this teaching experience. So this is why you need to get comfortable telling stories, and it's so important for the work that you want to do, whether your work is primarily teaching or not. All of us actually teach in some capacity. If you're a hospice nurse visiting patients, you're teaching families and patients all the time what to expect around the end of life experience. If you're an administrator, you're teaching your staff members how you want them to behave and what the culture of your organization is. So in any capacity, storytelling is a valuable asset. If you want to get a message across and you want to help other people change their behavior and attitudes and also learn something in the process. Stories are also used in narrative medicine to actually help bring about healing. And so I want to talk about some of the ways that stories are helpful in this regard, particularly if you're working one-on-one with people or a family, and how you might use stories to bring about healing. So first of all, stories teach us about the past. So we can tell stories to help people learn something they may not have gleaned from the past, or to learn something, say, about death and dying in our society and how people used to approach it over 100 years ago and how things have changed over time and why we may want to return to some of the practices of the past. But we can tell specific stories about the past that can help people create a picture in their minds of a way that things used to be different and could also be different now. Stories also help people, as we mentioned before, increase empathy through the release of oxytocin. But it's very helpful if you are trying to help someone relate to a different group of people, or perhaps forgive family members who think differently than they do, to use stories to increase empathy and to help them feel more positive toward other people. So you can tell them stories about people from a different walk of life than they're from, people with a different religion or ethnicity from them, and how those people in that group that they feel disconnected from may have had an experience similar to their own. So you can take advantage of this empathy increasing component of stories to utilize it to help bring someone to a more positive place in their relationships. Stories can also help us make sense of life, because sometimes that's how we end up looking back at our life and what it has meant to us, is by creating stories about what we did at a certain age, or an experience we had, an adventure we took, traveling that we did, people that we met, something that we learned. We create a story to help us make meaning of it, because stories generally have a beginning, middle, and an end. And they're rich with meaning. And so by talking about our lives in terms of the stories of our lives, we are able to create deeper meaning around our life itself. Stories can also reveal what is hidden, and this can be very valuable if you ask other people to tell you their stories. You may see things within the story that you hadn't recognized before, and even that the storyteller may not have recognized. And one of the ways that I utilize this factor about storytelling is in my own case with my mother. I asked her to tell me the stories of how her parents died and what that experience was like for her. And that was a great introduction into the topic of end-of-life issues, because she revealed through the stories what she didn't like about the death experience she had with her parents. And that gave us a foundation to work from toward thinking about her own end of life and how she might like it to be different from what she experienced with her parents. So you can really use stories to even reveal hidden biases that people have, or hidden fears that they may not have recognized before. Also, as we've said, stories engage the imagination, and that helps enhance creativity, because once you get someone to start imagining something being different than it is now, they are actually more open to solutions that they may not have accepted before. So engaging the imagination of someone is a very helpful way to get them to begin to see other possibilities. There isn't just one way that this story can play out. There are many possibilities. And so you can open their minds and help them become more accepting to other possibilities, instead of limiting themselves to one way of thinking and seeing things. And then stories can also enhance memory. So the more we help people be in the world of storytelling, whether they're listening to our stories or telling their own, the more we actually help them begin to remember more. And that can be very helpful with our older patients dealing with dementia, to help them recall stories and information from the past by talking about this world of stories and helping them listen, but also talk about their own stories. And so, you know, as we learned from the neurobiologists, it's normal for our own imagination to get engaged when we're listening to a story, because we start wondering what the outcome will be. We start actually writing the ending of the story in our own minds. And then we also imagine ourselves within that story. So you might tell a story about a patient who's in a similar situation to the patient you're working with. And you could even ask the person you're working with, what do you think happens next? Or what would you like to see happen next? What do you wish would happen next? And engage them in actually creating the story with you, one moment at a time. So an interesting thing that we have discovered from all of this research on storytelling is that not only does hearing stories and engaging with stories help people change their attitudes and their behavior, but it has a lasting effect, because people keep thinking about stories over time. And even if in the moment people are not moved by a story as they're listening to it, that story will stay in their minds. And particularly if it's something that connects with them very deeply. So it might be that weeks or months later, the person begins to change an attitude or to seek out new information or change their behavior because of a story they heard in the past that has stayed in their mind, that they've thought about over and over again. So this is the power of telling stories and utilizing them when you're working with people in any context. So I'll talk a little bit about some ways to use story, and some of these are if you're working one-on-one with someone, some tools that you might use to enhance storytelling, and then we'll talk a little bit after that about what makes a good story and some examples of some stories that you and types of stories that you might use. So some of the skills that a good storyteller has, first of all, include intuitive listening. So to be the best storyteller, you also have to be a really good listener. You have to have paid attention to the person or people you're telling a story to so that you have a sense of their worldview and what they're about, so that you've heard some information from them about what they're looking for or expecting or longing for. Why are they talking with you in the first place? Why are they taking your class, or why are they sitting with you in that moment? And you have to utilize your intuition as you are telling a story in order to observe how the story is landing with this person. One reason is because there are many different ways to tell a story. And if you're telling a story and you sense that the other person has stopped listening, it might be that you're giving too much detail and you need to back up a little bit. You need to move on to a more exciting bit of information in order to get them engaged again. And if you sense that the person is becoming overly emotional or triggered or upset by the story, then you may need to tone it down a little bit because you don't want that person to get lost in their own emotional experience and miss the rest of your story that you're telling. So there's kind of a narrow balance to walk here. We do want people to feel emotion, but if they get carried away by their emotion and never hear the rest of the story, that's also not helpful. So being intuitive and being a good listener and reading the signals from the people you're telling the story to, that's a really important skill to develop. The next skill to develop is the skill of reframing, and I'll talk a little bit about what that is. You can use it when you're using stories one-on-one, and if a person has told you a story, and say it's a story of being a victim, of being harmed by someone else, to reframe that story, you would help them look at it from a different perspective, and you would help them find, is there another message within this story other than just that someone else harmed you or did something that you didn't like? Is there another way of seeing what happened? So you're creating a new frame for this particular event or story. And you can do that with the stories you are telling as well. You create the frame around the story that you're telling. So you might have a story that you like to tell that involves a time when you got a flat tire when you were on your way to someone's house. But depending on who you're telling the story to, you might emphasize different parts of that story and you might frame it differently. So having this ability to tell one story in different ways is also really important for a storyteller. And again, you're intuitively reading the listeners you're telling the story to and sensing what they're resonating with or what's making a connection with them. And you may need to change the frame a little bit if you got it wrong in the first place. So you may have thought, oh, these people are really into cars and they're going to want to hear all about the flat tire and how it happened and what caused it, but maybe that's not what they're interested in at all. And then you choose a new frame and a new way of looking at that same story and telling the story. So another skill to use in storytelling and also story listening, I call the common thread. And So I love to use this skill, particularly in a class, if I'm going to string together a number of different stories. And the common thread for me is the primary message that I want people to take home that day. And so that thread needs to run through in some way or another each one of the stories that I tell so that they are able to trace it and see it and witness it in every story. It's actually very satisfying for people when they see a pattern in stories. And so the common thread is something that runs through every story. But you can also utilize the common thread when you're a listener and when, say, a patient or client that you're working with is telling you stories about their life. You observe for the common threads that run through all of their stories. And what you might find is that this person always has anger that comes up in certain situations, and you have witnessed it as a common thread in multiple stories. It might be a thread the person telling you these stories doesn't even recognize or isn't aware of, but when you pick it up as a pattern, you can point it out to them and say, I've noticed this. It's in every one of your stories, this one thing that seems to happen to you each time that you seem to go through. That can be a very powerful revelation to someone who's working on healing and working on gaining more insight or awareness into themselves. So if you see, these are tools that you can use both as a storyteller and also as a story listener. The next skill is to be aware of what I call the galaxy view. I've talked about this before. And being able to look at life through the biggest lens possible. Being able to look at the big picture view of what is life about? What are we doing here? What's the higher purpose for things? So that after going into the details and the nitty-gritty of a story, you can pull back a little bit from that story and get a higher perspective. This is such a good skill to have in life for all of us, is to not get lost in the details, but to learn how to pay attention to the details and then take a step backwards and look at the bigger picture, the more universal picture of what does this story we've just been into, what does it say about life in general? What does it say about our whole planet? What does it say about the universe? How does it relate to something bigger that we're experiencing right now together here on Earth? So this galaxy view, it's just a way of reminding you to always keep in mind the bigger picture view, whether you're telling a story to someone or listening to their story as well. If you are listening to a story that has been long in on details and a very fine look at moment by moment events that have happened, there might come a time at some point when there's a pause and that you can help the person telling that story step back a little bit and see the bigger picture. So it requires you to be aware of the bigger picture, the fact that there is a bigger picture, but to learn how to see it within the stories that you're telling or that are being told to you. And then the fifth, and this is going to lead into the next thing I'm going to talk about, are to use teaching stories when you speak to people and when you're teaching a class. And by a teaching story, I mean a story that has a specific outcome in mind. It talks about a lesson or a very important point that someone might need to learn. And the story itself could be any type of story, but it may end with the lesson. And so the big picture view that you're getting is actually the lesson that came about because of that story. So teaching stories take advantage of the power of storytelling in the first place to change people's attitudes, to inspire them to take action, to actually encourage them to become better people, to have more empathy and compassion for others. Now, one of the frustrations I find all the time with movies and books is that they don't very often tell good teaching stories. They don't very often lead people to a place of inspiration where they might be able to make changes in their lives and the world. Oftentimes, they're just stories that get people riled up and maybe angry or upset about something, but don't actually lead to any kind of positive growth or change. And I feel we need many more of these transformational stories in our world. So my hope is that when you tell stories, they will be transformational teaching stories that can actually help people grow and learn. So we'll look at what makes a good story. And this has come from some of the research that they've done around stories. And first of all, which is I think obvious, it should capture the attention of the listener. So you have to choose a story that relates enough to the people hearing your story that they are excited to pay attention to it. If you're telling a story maybe that takes place in a different part of the world and people don't quite understand or grasp what's happening, they may have a hard time getting engaged in and involved in the story. So you have to know your listeners and what might appeal to them. The story should be compelling enough that it sweeps the listeners into the world of the characters of the story. And so part of this is learning how to pace a story. You don't give all the details and you don't give all the answers at the beginning of the story. You pace it so that you gradually reveal information and create a little bit of tension and uncertainty within the story. And so a good story has this capacity of, wow, something kind of exciting or really interesting or really unique that happened to a person and that other people can't wait to listen to. But it's also important that this story keeps you as the storyteller engaged as well. And so here is where it's important to have a little list of stories that you use when you're teaching and talking. Because if you've told the same story over and over again, whenever you give a speech or whenever you're teaching, at some point you may lose your own engagement with that story. You may become bored with it. And if you as the storyteller are bored, your audience will also be bored. So it's important to remember not to tell the same story too many times unless you can stay excited about that story. And so maybe you have 4 or 5 different stories that you can tell at any given time and you switch them up and use different stories in different situations. That will keep those stories fresher for you. Because remember, your listeners are going to be synchronizing their brainwaves with yours. And if your brainwaves are saying, I'd rather be doing anything than telling this story, then that's what your listeners will be experiencing as well. So remember that the story can't be boring to you, and it should arouse your own emotions to a certain extent, but not so much that you have trouble telling the story. It should be arouse your emotions in a way that you feel excited about the story, but not out of your head, so to speak. You're still able to actually tell the story and keep all of the elements of it together. So the story needs to be relatable, and I've kind of alluded to that already, that the audience should have a sense of, oh, the people in the story are like me. I get who they are. I understand who they are. It can be about something unique that happens to those people, but they have to find something within the story that they relate to and connect to. That's essential in terms of getting engaged and swept away by the story. It also helps if it's a somewhat novel story, so it's something a little different than people may have heard before. It's not a story that's been told many, many times, Or even if it is, you can tell old stories and myths if you tell them in a new way, a way that presents the story and unfolds it that people may not be familiar with. The story should be engaging, but should be simple enough that people get it. People lose interest really quickly in stories that are over their heads. So say, for example, if I wanted to tell a story about something that happened in a hospital, but I got carried away with too many details about medical procedures and medications, you know, that story would lose interest for most of my audience very quickly because it shares information that just isn't part of their world space. So be sensitive once again to the listeners and make sure that it's at their level of understanding and knowledge if you're talking about a particular area. And I mentioned the idea of creating some tension in the story. So again, it's okay to withhold some of the outcome. It's okay to ask questions. It's okay to create a scenario when different things are possible that could happen. And in the beginning, we don't know what might happen. And it's okay to stir up emotions. And so it's all right to tell a sad story and have people feel moved by that. It's okay to tell a really happy, joyful story or a funny story, but it is helpful overall if you do engage the emotions. You might tell a story that makes people angry for a while at the beginning of the story. You don't want to leave them in a state of anger, but if it arouses some anger on behalf of a person in the story, that's okay too, as long as you have a resolution for it and a way to move them past anger so you don't leave them there in that place. And fear has been an emotion that's been utilized forever in storytelling, and particularly these days in movies and books. You can use a little bit of fear as well, but once again, don't leave people there. Move them on to a more positive place if you do engage the negative emotions. So think about these components of what makes a good story as you're preparing your stories that you're going to tell to your audience. And then I wanted to share with you some examples of different types of stories that you might utilize as you think this through. So I have a little list here. The first is just a personal story from your own life. And my example of this is, I told you a little bit, I told you about asking my mom to tell me the story of how it was for her when her parents died, and utilizing that to encourage her to create her advanced directives. But the next part of that story would be for me to talk about the fact that when it was the end of life for my mom, the fact that she had completed an advanced directive changed everything. It was so helpful to my brother and me when we had to make decisions for her. And ultimately, we decided to bring her home to her own home where she wanted to be. And I came and stayed with her to take care of her, which is something I knew from her advanced directives that she wanted as well. So I tell that story because it creates a beautiful picture of what it was like for my mom at the end of life and how helpful it was for me to know that I could honor my mom's wishes when she did die, and that I was able to help fulfill that for her, and what an act of love it was, but how she enabled that act of love on my part by letting me know what she wanted, by completing her advanced directives and talking to me about it. So that's a compelling teaching story from my own personal life that creates this image that many people would say, oh, well, that's what I want too. And so from there, I can move on and say, here's how to make that happen for you in your life. This is what you need to do. These are the steps you need to take in order to have this positive outcome at the end of life. So that's telling a personal story, something that I participated in that affected me and my mom. So that's the first type of teaching stories. Oftentimes, those are the most compelling because they engage your emotions as you tell the story and your creativity. And it's relatable because it's you and your life. It's what you actually lived. And people will be very moved and feel a great deal of empathy as they listen to you tell a personal story. But you may not have very many personal stories that you can tell in this area. And so it's also equally valid to tell stories that you have witnessed. So maybe they weren't stories that you participated in, but maybe you witnessed a story unfolding, perhaps if you were working with a family in hospice and you witnessed their story. You may be able to tell their story. Maybe it's a story of forgiveness and how a son forgave his mother before she died. You may not want to tell all the details of that story, and you definitely don't want to use anyone's names. You may want to alter the story, or you may want to just generalize a bit so that you're not revealing the identity of the people involved. But you can tell about the scenario that you witnessed and what impact it made on you to watch forgiveness happen between this son and his mother. So that would be an example of how to use a story that you witnessed, and then you bring in your own perspective on it. What did it mean to you to witness this exchange that happened? So that's one step away from the personal experience, but you can actually pull it in and make it more personal by talking about what you experienced. So the third type of story you can use to teach are borrowed stories, which you can borrow from books or movies or documentaries. I have some stories that I borrow from Dr. Jessica Zitter's book and also from the documentary film Extremis. There's a really compelling story in that film of a woman who has a massive heart attack and is in a coma. And the film shows the dilemma her family experiences in the ICU as they're trying to decide whether or not to keep her on life support. And you can see the conflicts that arise, and different family members feel differently about it, and none of them know what the patient herself would have chosen for herself. None of them are sure of that. So they are at a time of conflict and indecision. They're not able to come to a really peaceful, loving decision-making point because they simply don't know. They don't have enough information, and they're acting out of fear and grief and pain and all of this emotion because they don't have what I had at my mom's end of life. They don't have an advance directive that tells them how to make this decision, and their pain plays out so clearly in that documentary, and that's a compelling story to tell side by side with the story of my personal story of my mom at her end of life, to compare these two scenarios. And for most people, the scenario in the ICU of the family in conflict and unable to make a decision of what to do next for their loved one, that's a scenario no one wants. People say, I don't want that to be me. How can it be different? That's where I bring them back to my story with my mom. And all it took was completing her advance directive, thinking through her wishes, and then talking to me and my brother about it so that when our time to make a decision came, we both knew exactly what she wanted. There was no conflict. We knew it was clear to both of us. So you can see how when you combine stories, and in this case for me, a personal story and a borrowed story, you can contrast them with one another. And you can give people these alternatives. You can paint a portrait for them of these are some of the scenarios that are possible. And with their own imagination, they can see them and their family in either situation. And it makes it clear, doesn't it, how that could motivate someone to take action after this class to say, I'm going to go fill out my advance directive. I recognize how powerful and important that could be. So utilizing different types of stories and using them in contrast with one another, really, really powerful. So that was type number three, borrowed stories. The fourth type of story that I use often are nature stories. So I tell stories of things that have happened in the natural world. One story I use a lot about the cycle of life deals with the fire in Yellowstone Park that took place back in the 1980s, because I grew up in Wyoming and visited Yellowstone Park every summer of my childhood. So it's a place near and dear to me. And talking about the massive destruction that occurred from that fire, but also the aftermath of the fire, and showing slides and pictures of how the forest and the park gradually recovered and healed over years and years after the fire. So that story from nature, a true story with lots and lots of photographs to document it, has a really powerful teaching message too about the fact that we can endure crisis and trauma, and we can heal and grow and recover from tragedy and disaster when it happens in our lives. It paints this picture of hope and kind of the phoenix rising from the ashes. So nature stories, there's so many, many true stories of disasters in nature that you can tell, and you can look them up and read about them. I had to go back and study the Yellowstone fire, because while I knew all about it, I didn't know exactly the details and how many acres were burned and how long it lasted, that sort of thing. I had to go back and research that a little bit in order to make the storytelling more compelling for me to offer. But that was a story from nature. And oftentimes when we're talking about death and dying, nature stories are compelling because nature exhibits the cycle of life and death. And it's sometimes a good introduction to death to talk about nature and destruction in nature, that everything dies. And yet nature persists, because everything that is new, all new life, really bursts forth from the fact that other life has died in the past. So remember nature stories. If you don't have any of your own, look them up. Watch some little videos on YouTube about natural disasters and how the earth recovers after a natural event like that. You can also tell historical stories. And so that is something that can be really powerful. I think one of the stories, I don't tell this, but it's one that made an impression on me, is that Thomas Jefferson and John Adams both died on the same day, and it was the 4th of July. So two of the founding fathers who authored the Constitution. And, you know, that story of synchronicity, and it's a historical fact, so you can look it up and you can get more details about it if you want to. That can be a powerful story as well, and a way to help people think about things, and also to just be aware of events and experiences in the past that have something almost magical and mysterious about them, and just to retain that information. So you can go back in time, and I mentioned before, you can talk about how people used to die at home, and funerals used to be held at home in the parlor, and people would come and visit the body in the family home, and they might even be buried out on the homestead in their own yard. And so you can talk about the history of funerals and burial traditions and how they've changed over time. So historical stories are compelling as well, because all of us feel some kind of connection with the past. And even those people who don't know very much about the past are often interested in learning more about the past if you tell the story in the right way. And then next, you can also use myths and legends from the past. So these are stories that may or may not be true, but stories that have been told over and over again. Some people tell Greek myths, or, astrological myths about constellations and the stories from some of the constellations. You could tell Native American stories or Buddhist stories. I have a story that's called Kisha Gotama that I often tell. It's a story of a woman who goes to the Buddha after her child dies, and her husband has also died previously, but her child dies and she's completely distraught and devastated and goes to the Buddha and brings her dead child in her arms and asks the Buddha to restore the life of her child and insists that the Buddha give her back her child. And the Buddha says, "I can do that for you, but first I want you to bring me a mustard seed from any house in your village that has not been touched by death." So Kisha Gotama walks to every house in her village, asks if they've been touched by death because she wants to get a mustard seed to bring back to the Buddha so that her child's life will be restored. And in the end, she walks back to the Buddha, very humble, still carrying her child, and says, "There was not one single home in the entire village that has not been touched by death." And so Kisha Gotama at that moment surrendered to her own grief and to her loss and accepted that death is inevitable and it touches everyone, and that she cannot demand that death not exist or that death be taken away because it is part of life. So that's a story, a legend or a myth that's been told in Buddhist circles for a long time, and that can be powerful. So just an example of a story that you might tell that has a powerful message to it. If you do tell something like that story, then you may need to bring it into the present time and give an example from today of what that might look like today. And the talk about the grief of parents who've had children die and the pain and the tragedy of that and how unthinkable it is. And yet we cannot escape that sort of pain in life. It's part of life. So just an example, I'll go through those, that list again of types of stories, just to reiterate them. First, personal stories from your own life. Second, witnessed stories that that you have maybe not participated in, but that you've witnessed for other people. Borrowed stories from books and movies. Nature stories, historical stories, and then myths and legends. So those are six different types of stories that you can use in your storytelling. So keep that in mind and then start gathering some of each type of story. The more stories you have available to you, the more fun you'll have in a way, because as I was saying, your stories won't get stale or old for you or boring because you'll have so many that you can rely upon. And in fact, when you're in that state of intuitive listening and speaking, you will perhaps think of a story in the moment that you hadn't planned to tell, but somehow you will know, like, that's the story I need right now. And one of your stories from your collection will come into mind for whatever reason, and it will turn out to be the perfect story to have told. So having this collection is one of the most helpful things you can do. So I encourage you, you're welcome to use stories that I've told if you want to keep them. And I always try to give attribution to the originators of the stories, like Dr. Jessica Zitter from her book and from her film, if I do use someone else's story. But I think most of us are happy to have stories shared and spread, particularly when they help teach people and they help motivate people to positive action and more empathy and more love, because that's what we're really trying to generate here in the world. So I'm going to just say goodbye now and hope that this episode has been helpful to you to learn how to use stories in your teaching. And please remember that we're here for love. So face your fear, be ready for whatever happens next, and love each and every moment of your precious life. Bye-bye.